Tom Sawyer, Detective. Chapter 1. An Invitation for Tom and Huck. Note, strange as the incidents of this story are, they are not inventions, but facts, even to the public confession of the accused. I take them from an old-time Swedish criminal trial, change the actors, and transfer the scenes to America. I have added some details, but only a couple of them are important ones. M.T. Well, it was the next spring after me and Tom Sawyer set our old nigger Jim free, the time he was chained up for a runaway slave down there on Tom's Uncle Silas's farm in Arkansas. The frost was working out of the ground, and out of the air, too, and it was getting closer and closer on to barefoot time every day, and next it would be marble time, and next mumble type egg, and next tops and hoops, and next kites, and then right away it would be summer and going in a swimming. It just makes a boy homesick to look ahead like that and see how far off summer is. Yes, and it sets him to sighing and saddening around, and there's something the matter with him, he don't know what. But anyway, he gets out by himself and mopes and thinks, and mostly he hunts for a lonesome place high up on the hill in the edge of the woods, and sets there and looks away off on the big Mississippi down there a reaching miles and miles around the points where the timber looks smoky and dim, it's so far off and still, and everything's so solemn it seems like everybody you've loved is dead and gone, and you most wish you was dead and gone too, and done with it all. Don't you know what that is? It's spring fever. That is what the name of it is. And when you've got it, you want, oh, you don't quite know what it is you do want, but it just fairly makes your heart ache, you want it so. It seems to you that mainly what you want is to get away from the same old tedious things you're so used to seeing and so tired of, and set something new. That is the idea, you want to go and be a wanderer, you want to go wandering far away to strange countries where everything is mysterious and wonderful and romantic. And if you can't do that, you'll put up with considerable less, you'll go anywhere you can go, just so as to get away, and be thankful of the chance, too. Well, me and Tom Sawyer had the spring fever, and had it bad, too, but it weren't any use to think about Tom trying to get away, because, as he said, his Aunt Polly wouldn't let him quit school and go traipsing off summers wasting time, so we was pretty blue. We was sitting on the front steps one day about sundown talking this way, when out comes his Aunt Polly with a letter in her hand and says, "Tom, I reckon you've got to pack up and go down to Arkansas, your Aunt Sally wants you." I most jumped out of my skin for joy. I reckon Tom would fly at his aunt and hug her head off, but if you believe me he sat there like a rock, and never said a word. It made me fit to cry to see him act so foolish, with such a noble chance as this opening up. Why, we might lose it if he didn't speak up and show he was thankful and grateful. But he sat there and studied till I was that distressed I didn't know what to do, then he says, "Very CAM," and I could have shot him for it. "Well," he says, "I'm right down sorry, Aunt Polly, but I reckon I got to be excused, for the present." His Aunt Polly was knocked so stupid and so mad at the cold impudence of it that she couldn't say a word for as much as a half a minute, and this gave me a chance to nudge Tom and whisper, "Ain't you got any sense? Spiling such a noble chance as this and throwing it away?" But he weren't disturbed. He mumbled back, "Huck Finn, do you want me to let her see how bad I want to go? Why, she'd begin to doubt, right away, and imagine a lot of sicknesses and dangers and objections, and first you know she'd take it all back. You let me alone, I reckon I know how to work her." Now I never would a thought of that. But he was right. Tom Sawyer was always right, the levelest head I ever see, and always at himself and ready for anything you might spring on him. By this time his Aunt Polly was all straight again, and she let fly. She says, "You'll be excused. You will." Well, I never heard the like of it in all my days. The idea of you talking like that to me. Now take yourself off and pack your traps, and if I hear another word out of you about what you'll be excused from and what you won't, I'll excuse you, with a hickory." She hit his head a thump with her thimble as we dodged by, and he let on to be whimpering as we struck for the stairs. Up in his room he hugged me, he was so out of his head for gladness because he was going traveling. And he says, "Before we get away she'll wish she hadn't let me go, but she won't know any way to get around it now. After what she said, her pride won't let her take it back." Tom was packed in 10 minutes, all except what his aunt and Mary would finish up for him, then we waited 10 more for her to get cooled down and sweet and gentle again, for Tom said it took her 10 minutes to unruffle in times when half of her feathers was up, but 20 when they was all up, and this was one of the times when they was all up. Then we went down, being in a sweat to know what the letter said. She was sitting there in a brown study, with it laying in her lap. We sat down, and she says, "They're in considerable trouble down there, and they think you and Huck will be a kind of diversion for them, comfort, they say. Much of that they'll get out of you and Huck Finn, I reckon. There's a neighbor named Brace Dunlap that's been wanting to marry their Benny for 3 months, and at last they told him point blank and once for all, he couldn't, so he has soured on them, and they're worried about it. I reckon he's somebody they think they better be on the good side of, for they've tried to please him by hiring his no-account brother to help on the farm when they can't hardly afford it, and don't want him around anyhow. Who are the Dunlaps? They live about a mile from Uncle Silas's place, at Polly. All the farmers live about a mile apart down there, and Brace Dunlap is a long sight richer than any of the others, and owns a whole grist of niggers. He's a widower, 36 years old, without any children, and is proud of his money and overbearing, and everybody is a little afraid of him. I judge he thought he could have any girl he wanted, just for the asking, and it must have set him back a good deal when he found he couldn't get Benny. Why, Benny's only half as old as he is, and just as sweet and lovely as, well, you've seen her. Poor old Uncle Silas, why, it's pitiful, him trying to curry favor that way, so hard pushed and poor, and yet hiring that useless Jupiter Dunlap to please his ornery brother. What a name, Jupiter. Where'd he get it? It's only just a nickname. I reckon they've forgot his real name long before this. He's 27, now, and has had it ever since the first time he ever went in swimming. The school teacher seen a round brown mole the size of a dime on his left leg above his knee, and four little bits of moles around it, when he was naked, and he said it minded him of Jupiter and his moons, and the children thought it was funny, and so they got to calling him Jupiter, and he's Jupiter yet. He's tall, and lazy, and sly, and sneaky, and ruder cowardly, too, but kind of good-natured, and wears long brown hair and no beard, and hasn't got a cent, and Brace boards him for nothing, and gives him his old clothes to wear, and despises him. Jupiter is a twin. What's t'other twin like? Just exactly like Jupiter, so they say, used to was, anyway, but he hain't been seen for 7 years. He got to robbing when he was 19 or 20, and they jailed him, but he broke jail and got away, up north here, Summers. They used to hear about him robbing and burglaring now and then, but that was years ago. He's dead, now. At least that's what they say. They don't hear about him anymore. What was his name? Jake. There wasn't anything more said for a considerable while, the old lady was thinking. At last she says. The thing that is mostly worrying your Aunt Sally is the tempers that man Jupiter gets your uncle into. Tom was astonished, and so was I, Tom says. Tempers? Uncle Silas? Land, you must be joking. I didn't know he had any temper. Works him up into perfect rages, your Aunt Sally says he acts as if he would really hit the man, sometimes. Aunt Polly, it beats anything I ever heard of. Why, he's just as gentle as mush. Well, she's worried, anyway. Says your Uncle Silas is like a changed man, on account of all this quarreling. And the neighbors talk about it, and lay all the blame on your uncle, of course, because he's a preacher and hain't got any business to quarrel. Your Aunt Sally says he hates to go into the pulpit, he's so ashamed, and the people have begun to cool toward him, and he ain't as popular now as he used to was. Well, ain't it strange? Why, Aunt Polly, he was always so good and kind and moony and absent-minded and chuckle-headed and lovable. Why, he was just an angel. What can be the matter of him, do you reckon? Chapter 2. Jake Dunlap. We had powerful good luck, because we got a chance in a stern wheeler from away north which was bound for one of them bayous or one horse rivers away down Louisiana way, and so we could go all the way down the upper Mississippi and all the way down the lower Mississippi to that farm in Arkansas without having to change steamboats at St. Louis, not so very much short of 1,000 miles at one pull. A pretty lonesome boat, there weren't but few passengers, and all old folks, that sat around, wide apart, dozing, and was very quiet. We was 4 days getting out of the upper river, because we got aground so much. But it weren't dull, couldn't be for boys that was traveling, of course. From the very start me and Tom allowed that there was somebody sick in the stateroom next to Ern, because the meals was always toted in there by the waiters. By and by we asked about it, Tom did and the waiter said it was a man, but he didn't look sick. Well, but ain't he sick? I don't know, maybe he is, but pears to me he's just letting on. What makes you think that? Because if he was sick he would pull his clothes off some time or other, don't you reckon he would? Well, this one don't. At least he don't ever pull off his boots, anyway. The mischief he don't. Not even when he goes to bed? No. It was always nuts for Tom Sawyer, a mystery was. If you'd lay out a mystery and a pie before me and him, you wouldn't have to say take your choice, It was a thing that would regulate itself. Because in my nature I have always run to Pi, whilst in his nature he has always run to mystery. People are made different. And it is the best way. Tom says to the waiter. What's the man's name?
Phillips.
Where'd he come aboard?
I think he got aboard at Alexandria, up on the Iowa line.
What do you reckon he's a-playing?
I hain't any notion, I never thought of it.
I says to myself, here's another one that runs to Pi. Anything peculiar about him? The way he acts or talks?
No, nothing, except he seems so scary, and keeps his doors locked night and day both, and when you knock he won't let you until he opens the door a crack and sees who it is.
By Jiminy, it's interesting. I'd like to get a look at him. Say, the next time you're going in there, don't you reckon you could spread the door and...
No, indeedy. He's always behind it. He would block that game.
Tom studied over it, and then he says. Looky here. You lend me your apron and let me take him his breakfast in the morning. I'll give you a quarter. The boy was plenty willing enough, if the head steward wouldn't mind. Tom says that's all right, he reckoned he could fix it with the head steward, and he done it. He fixed it so as we could both go in with aprons on and toting victuals. He didn't sleep much, he was in such a sweat to get in there and find out the mystery about Phillips, and moreover he'd done a lot of guessing about it all night, which weren't no use, for if you are going to find out the facts of a thing, what's the sense in guessing out what ain't the facts and wasting ammunition? I didn't lose no sleep. I wouldn't give a dern to know what's the matter of Phillips, I says to myself. Well, in the morning we put on the aprons and got a couple of trays of truck, and Tom he knocked on the door. The man opened it a crack, and then he let us in and shut it quick. By Jackson, when we got a sight of him, we most dropped the trays. And Tom says, why, Jupiter Dunlap, where'd you come from? Well, the man was astonished, of course, and first off he looked like he didn't know whether to be scared, or glad, or both, or a witch, but finally he settled down to being glad, and then his color come back, though at first his face had turned pretty white. So we got to talking together while he had his breakfast. And he says, but I ain't Jupiter Dunlap. I just as soon tell you who I am, though, if you'll swear to keep mum, for I ain't no Phillips, either. Tom says, we'll keep mum, but there ain't any need to tell who you are if you ain't Jupiter Dunlap.
Why?
Because if you ain't him your t'other twin, Jake. You're the spittin' image of Jupiter.
Well, I'm Jake.
But looky here. How do you come to know us Dunlaps? Tom told about the adventures we had down there at his Uncle Silas's last summer, and when he see that there weren't anything about his folks, or him either, for that matter, that we didn't know, he opened out and talked perfectly free and candid. He never made any bones about his own case, said he'd been a hard lot, was a hard lot yet, and reckoned he'd be a hard lot plumb to the end. He said of course it was a dangerous life, and, he give a kind of gasp, and set his head like a person that's listening. We didn't say anything, and so it was very still for a second or so, and there weren't no sounds but the screaking of the woodwork and the chug-chugging of the machinery down below. Then we got him comfortable again, telling him about his people, and how Brace's wife had been dead 3 years, and Brace wanted to marry Benny and she shook him, and Jupiter was working for Uncle Silas, and him and Uncle Silas quarreling all the time, and then he let go and laughed.
Land. He says, it's like old times to hear all this diddle-tattle, and does me good. It's been 7 years and more since I heard any. How do they talk about me these days?
Who?
The farmers, and the family.
Why, they don't talk about you at all, at least only just a mention, once in a long time.
The nation. He says, surprised, why is that?
Because they think you are dead long ago.
No.
Are you speaking true?
Honor bright, now.
He jumped up, excited.
Honor bright. There ain't anybody thinks you are alive.
Then I'm saved, sure. I'll go home. They'll hide me and save my life.
You keep mum.
Swear you'll keep mum, swear you'll never, never tell on me.
Oh, boys, be good to a poor devil that's being hunted day and night, and doesn't show his face. I've never done you any harm, I'll never do you any, as God is in the heavens, swear you'll be good to me and help me save my life.
We'd a swore it if he'd been a dog, and so we done it.
Well, he couldn't love us enough for it or be grateful enough, poor cuss, it was all he could do to keep from hugging us.
We talked along, and he got out a little handbag and begun to open it, and told us to turn our backs. We done it, and when he told us to turn again he was perfectly different to what he was before. He had on blue goggles and the naturalest looking long brown whiskers and mustaches you ever see.
His own mother wouldn't anode him. He asked us if he looked like his brother Jupiter, now. No, Tom said, there ain't anything left that's like him except the long hair. All right, I'll get that cropped close to my head before I get there, then him and Brace will keep my secret, and I'll live with them as being a stranger, and the neighbors won't ever guess me out. What do you think? Tom he studied a while, then he says. Well, of course me and Huck are going to keep Mum there, but if you don't keep Mum yourself there's going to be a little bit of a risk. It ain't much, maybe, but it's a little. I mean, if you talk, won't people notice that your voice is just like Jupiter's, and mightn't it make them think of the twin they reckoned was dead, but maybe after all was hid all this time under another name? By George, he says, you're a sharp one. You're perfectly right. I've got to play deaf and dumb when there's a neighbor around. If I'd have struck for home and forgot that little detail, however, I wasn't striking for home. I was breaking for any place where I could get away from these fellows that are after me, then I was going to put on this disguise and get some different clothes, and... He jumped for the outside door and laid his ear against it and listened, pale and kind of panting. Presently he whispers. Sounded like cocking a gun. Lord, what a life to lead. Then he sunk down in a chair all limp and sick-like, and wiped the sweat off of his face. Chapter 3. A Diamond Robbery. From that time out, we was with him most all the time, and one or t'other of us slept in his upper berth. He said he had been so lonesome, and it was such a comfort to him to have company, and somebody to talk to in his trouble.